Okay. This week's portion is Be'alotcha and it's on page 787. We didn't have a class last week because of Shavuot. I will do something that connects Bamidbar, Naso, and Be'alotcha, the last three week's portions, based on what's written in our week's portion. So the parasha starts earlier, but I want to go to page 783 and read a few psukim that will bring us into the topic. Okay, so we are on Pasuk 1, right? Chapter 10, page 783. Hashem spoke to Moses saying, make for yourself two silver trumpets. Make them hammered out, and they shall be used for the summoning of the assembly and to cause the camp to journey. So trumpets have to be made, and they have two roles. One is to summon the assembly, and second, to indicate that they have to move from one place to another. And then the Torah gives us details. The Torah differentiates between the way these trumpets will be blown in each of those roles. So let's see. When they sound a long blast with them, the entire assembly shall assemble to you. So when they are going to assemble, what will be the type of the blast? A long one. Okay? To the entrance of the tent of meeting. If they sound a long blast with one, the leaders shall assemble to you, the heads of Israel's thousands. When you sound short blasts, the camps resting to the east shall journey. And then after their journey, they start their journey, another blast, a broken one, and then another group of people is moving, and so on. So there are two roles and two types of blasts. To assemble the people, it's a long blast. To start a journey, it's a broken one. Later on, if you look in verse number 7 and 8, there are more details. When you gather together the congregation, you shall sound a long blast, but not a short blast. Meaning, it's very meaningful. What type of a blast do you blow? Right? This one or this one? For assembling, it's always a long one. Okay? That's very, very important. And then there is an addition, verse number 10. On a day of your gladness, and on your festivals, and on your new moon, you shall sound the trumpets over your elevation offering and over your feast offerings, and they shall be a remembrance for you before your God. I am Hashem your God. So there is an additional time when we use the blasts, and this is on holidays. Now, the previous two, for gathering the people and starting the journey, took place only in the desert. But the second one, blasting the shofar on holidays, this was all along. As long as we had the Beit HaMikdash, we gathered the people on Yomim Tovim, we blast these trumpets. So what is the meaning of it? Why the blasting? And why do we have two kinds, right? Short one, long one. It's like in Tkiat Shofar, we have a long one, two, and then we have two. It's shorter ones, right? So we have to understand, what do we hear when we hear a long one? And what do we hear when we hear a short one? When we hear a long one, it's like smooth, right? One long. A broken one sounds like crying. Like sobbing, right? And this is really what is explained. Then when we want to show something that has to do with resting, with peace, with contentment, then it will be a long one. When the situation is a difficult one, that's when we will have a bless that is short and reminds us of pain, of crying, of difficulty. So when we gather the people, something very wonderful, very positive, Moshe is going to talk to them, right? Teach them Torah. Then it's a long, smooth one. But when they start a journey, it's a short one, because a journey is something difficult. You have to pack, you have to travel, you have to walk, right? You are in the sun, you are in the rain, right? It's a difficulty, right? So when they started the journey, it was a short one. When they arrived at their destination and they had to again encamp, it was a long one. Later on, at the time of a war, obviously it's fame, right? So when it was painful, you have a short one. But on holidays, which are happy days, right? Days of rest, of peace, of contentment, it's a long one. So this is the obligation. And that's how it was in the desert all along. And as we said, certain things continued later on too. Then, right after, we are told, if you look at verse number 11, it was in the second year. Sorry, my phone is still here from before. Okay. And it was in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month, the cloud was lifted from a tabernacle. This was one sign that they have to start to journey. The children of Israel journeyed. Okay, let me just take it away from here. I'm sorry, I usually take it out, but I have to call Esther, so it's here. Okay, so let's go further. The children of Israel, I'm at 12, verse 12, page 785. The children of Israel journeyed on their journey from the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. So we are told about a journey, right? And then we are told what was the order, okay? And if you go further to page 787, verse number 33, the Torah tells us they journeyed from the mountain of Hashem, a three-day distance, and the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem journeyed before them, a three-day distance, to search out for them a resting place. The cloud of Hashem was over them by day when they journeyed from the camp. Okay, so what do we hear here? First, Hashem gives instructions how to journey from one place to the other. The cloud will lift up. We didn't read this part, and this will be a sign to prepare for a journey. Then the trumpets were blasted, right, in the broken one, and they started to walk. Up till now, they were still at Sinai for over a year. And now for the first time, they are told to start to go. And the Torah tells us that they walked for 3 days. And the Aron, the Ark, that was obviously moving from one place to the other with them, it was in the midst of them, right, was also going with them a journey of 3 days. What's the meaning of what we are told here? So we have to understand altogether what are the journeys in the desert all about. Originally, it was to be, it had to be, a very short journey towards the land of Israel. From Sinai, they had to go a few days and then arrive in the land of Israel. As we know, what took place in between was the sin of the spies that we will hear about next week. And this delayed it for many, many years. They were for 40 years in the desert. But regardless if it's a short journey or a long journey, the nature of the journey conceptually is the same. It's not just a physical journey, it's a spiritual journey. Hashem told them when to start moving and when to encamp. Here we hear about a journey of 3 days. Every day stands for something that they had to accomplish. They are going to be the nation of Hashem. They are going to go to the land of Israel and fulfill a purpose, that purpose that the world was created for. They have to be ready for it. It's a journey. It's heading towards the end of time, where the whole world will come to purpose, right? So it can be a shorter journey and it can be a longer journey. It basically depends on what we do along the journey, right? So originally it was supposed to be a short journey towards the land of Israel. And as long as they are journeying towards there, they are preparing themselves to the situation of being in Israel and hopefully bringing the world to purpose. What are the things that they have to work on, that they have to accomplish in order to be ready for it? There are different things that they have to do. Before we go into the, okay, maybe let's go differently. There are three categories of things that include basically everything. It has, each category has many details in it, but it's basic three categories that they have to do, that they have to accomplish, three things that they have to accomplish, and then they are ready. And it's a famous statement of our sages in Book of our Ethics. There are three things that we have to overcome in order to be perfect, and these are kin'ah, ta'ava, and kavod, jealousy, physical desires that are against the will of the Torah, right, that are negative, and the pursuit of honor. Kin'ah, ta'ava, and kavod. When we perfect these three areas, that's when we accomplished our journey, and we can come to where we are supposed to come to bring the world to purpose, to bring the Mashiach. And that's why we speak here about a journey of 3 days, right? Each day standing for one thing that has to be accomplished, one thing that has to be worked on till it is conquered, till it is accomplished. The journey is the time when they struggle, when they try to overcome and fight the desire to fall into jealousy or physical desires and indulgence in physical desires or an indulgence in pursuit of honor. So the journey stands for the time where they work on it and try to perfect themselves in each of those areas. When they accomplish something, then the struggle is over in this area. And then a blessed, a long blessed that indicates rest will be blown. And that's basically the story of Jewish history, the pattern of Jewish history, and the pattern of the life of each and every one of us. We have things that we have to accomplish in our lifetime, in those three areas. We have to overcome jealousy, not overcome indulgence in physical desires and pursuit of honor. There are endless levels in each of them. While we work on a particular level, we are in a place, in each of those areas, we have our own place where we are holding in indulgence in physical desires, in the pursuit of honor, in jealousy. And we have to do it stage by stage. Let's say we undertake to accomplish a higher level. Then we have a struggle because we have to go out of our comfort zone, change who we are, and that's a struggle. When we finish doing it, then this area is conquered, this level is already ours, and we have no struggle there anymore. Hopefully, we set up a higher goal in this area, right, after we base it fully at the time of rest, right, we set up a higher level. And again, we are going out on a journey, struggling till we conquer it, and then we have rest from this particular level. And so on and so on. And it's a lifetime task, right, because there are endless levels. Now let's first go to the generation of the desert and see where they are and what's happening here, and then we'll go into our lives and what it means for us. When Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people, it was after he asked all other nations if they want it or not. And as we know, each nation asked Hashem what's written in the Torah in order to know if they want to accept it or not, if they can accept it or not. Hashem told each nation the things that is the hardest for them to accomplish. Because if you can accomplish the hardest, obviously you can accomplish the rest, right? So for example, to Esav he said, don't kill. Because the essence of Esav is living on the throne. They are killers, they have a tendency to shed blood. So that's not permissible in the Torah. So Hashem told them, don't kill. They said, we can't feed out. And that's why they did not accept the Torah. He came to Ishmael, Hashem told them, lo tignov, don't steal. And we know in Ishmael it's written that he steals, right? So he didn't accept the Torah. The Jewish people, Hashem asked, do you want to receive the Torah? And they said, we'll do and we'll hear. We don't find a discussion about what's written in the Torah. And we praise the Jewish people a lot for it. They didn't ask, they were ready to accept whatever is there. But still, the question is asked, what was the most difficult thing for the Jewish people that they had to overcome in order to accept the Torah? And the answer, when I read it the first time, was really unexpected, totally unexpected. What was it? That Hashem told them not to get close to the mountain of Sinai. When the Jewish people came to Sinai, Moshe could go on top of the mountain. Aaron was a little further. The Jewish people were not permitted to touch the mountain. They had to be a certain distance from the mountain. And this was very, very difficult for the Jewish people. And we have to understand why. Why is not killing hard for Esav? Why is not stealing hard for Ishmael? Because in their nature, they have a strong desire for it. Our strong desire, as a result of the fact that we are children of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, that we have Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah's mothers, and so on, all the great people did the giving of the Torah. Our essence, our desire, greatest desire, especially in this generation, was to get close to Hashem. So when they were told, you can't, only Moshe will go to the top of the mountain. Only Aaron will get a little further below Moshe. But you cannot even touch the mountain. And the punishment for touching the mountain was death. Hashem said, be careful, because if you'll touch the mountain, you'll die. This was so difficult for the Jewish people as not killing for Esav. And that's why they deserved the Torah, because they obeyed. And nobody touched the mountain. The Ramban, when he, in his preface to the book of Bamidbar, to the book that we are reading from now, says that what took place in the desert was really the same as took place on Mount Sinai. On Mount Sinai, it was for one day. In the desert, it was for 40 years. Because Hashem assigned everyone to his place, and they could not change it. As we know, the tabernacle was in the middle of the camp, and Hashem said which tribes should camp on each side of the tabernacle, east, south, west, and north. In each of those directions were three tribes in a particular order, and they had to maintain the order and could not change it. Even while traveling from one place to the other, it was in keeping this order. Not only this, there were three camps in the desert. There was what we call Machane Shechina, the camp of the Shechina, which is the Beit HaMikdash itself, which is a place that the Kohanim come in. There is a camp of the Leviats, when camped around the tabernacle, but closer to it than the rest of the Jewish people. And they also were divided into four directions. On the east were Moshe and Aaron, then in the south, Keat, and so on. Right? Hashem said to each family of the Levites where to encamp, and they could not change it. Furthermore, later on, the Levites were assigned to carry the Mishkan from one place to the other when they went on a journey. And Hashem assigned each family of the Levites, as we said, there were three families plus Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron did not carry the Mishkan, only the three families. The Torah tells each family exactly which parts of the Mishkan they will carry. And it could not be changed. More than this, the artifacts that were in the Mishkan, the Aron, the Menorah, the altars, were covered by the Kohanim. Only after they were covered and only by the Kohanim could the Levites come and take them. So there were boundaries. You can be only here, you can be only here. This is what you can do, this is what you cannot do. Now, it's obvious that it's more close and a more holy place inside the Beit HaMikdash, closer to the Beit HaMikdash. Nobody said a word. They accepted it fully and completely without any complaint. And the Ramban says also, other commentaries say, that it was a duplication of what happened at Sinai. Because at Sinai, when they encamped by Sinai, it's written that they were like one person with one heart. It's written by Yechan in the singular. He encamped rather than they encamped. Because they were like one person with one heart. They totally were happy where they were and did not say anything to him, you know, did not complain, did not say a word about the locations they were given, even though they were people who were closer than them, right? And they didn't feel arrogant about the fact that they are closer. What is a very, very high level, obviously, and this is what happened also in the beginning that the Jewish people encamped in the desert. Till chapter 11 in Bamidbar, which is already in the middle of our week's portion, this ideal situation took place. Now, it's a very high level that they reached, but we know that there is a very big difference between reaching a high level and maintaining it over time. They reached a height that is amazing, but to the extent that all nations were jealous of them, but it was still a fresh thing, a new thing. And now they had to work hard in order to maintain this level forever. And that's not easy. So we find that they are starting the journey. And from this point and ahead, from chapter 11 till the end of the Chumash, we hear about their journeys that were basically struggling in these three areas and slowly, slowly conquering them. There were ups and downs. It was not all uphill, like any spiritual journey. It's never all uphill, right? We are human, we have free choice, we have a bad inclination. There are many factors that affect us, and it's a struggle, it's hard work. So the Torah tells us from now and ahead about the different things that they face, different challenges that they faced in those areas, and how they handle them. I want to address three in our week's portion and see that it's really in the three areas that we are discussing. Kin'ah, ta'ava, and kavod. Jealousy, indulgence in physicality, and the pursuit of honor. So the first story is in the beginning of chapter 11, and we are told only one sentence that without commentaries, we wouldn't even know what it is. It's the same page, 787, and the Torah says the people took to seeking complaints. They did not complain. They were like complainers, meaning something inside them. There was already a beginning of dissatisfaction when another person complained, when he's not happy with his situation, when he feels he shouldn't be here. This should not be his situation. That's basically the cause of any jealousy. We look at other people, we see what they have. We compare them to us. And if they have or are or were given more than what we have, we feel, why them, why not me? That's jealousy. That's the beginning. That's number one. Now, what were they complaining? Here there are different commentaries. One of the, Rashi explains that Hashem made them walk very quickly for good reasons. He wanted them to go back to the land of Israel, but they felt the journey is too quick. They can't handle it, right? Spiritually, right? So they started to feel uncomfortable wherever they are. So here we have dealing with jealousy, right? Let's go further. The next story later on is that they, the story of Massa and Meriva, okay? They are in verse number 3 in the next page. The Torah tells us the rebel that was among them, cultivated and craving, and the children of Israel also wept once more and said, "Who will feed us? Who will feed us meat? We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt, free of charge," and so on and so on. So as you see, it's a complaint about food. I won't go into the details of the story because that's not my topic for today, and we also discussed it in the test, but they complain about the food, they complain about the man, right? So it has to do with physicality. It was a very high-level complaint. The man is like food for angels. They felt they're not ready for it. They want to be more on a human level, and then less will be demanded from them spiritually because it's too much together. But regardless of how we explain it, it has to do with what they want to eat. Physicality on their level. The third one, and what I'm saying is based on Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, who was one of the great Hasidic rabbis between the two world wars. He said the third place that he connects to this idea is the story of Aharon and Miriam speaking about Moshe. And on their very, very high level, and I would not say it if he would have not said it, of course, right, but on their very, very high level, it was comparing themselves to Moshe, right, and not understanding the behavior of Moshe, thinking that he is on their level. And it was a matter of honor, says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, on a very, very, very high level. But as we see, the journeys that they take are journeys where they are placed with challenges. And in each place, while they are traveling towards the place, it means they are traveling towards achieving a higher level in one of those areas. What exactly depends on their level and the challenge that Hashem puts in front of them. The length of the journey will be as long as Hashem feels, knows that they need to struggle with it before they achieve the goal. When they achieve the goal, Hashem told them to rest. And then the blessed will be a long one, indicating peace, rest, quiet. Now, after the golden, after the story of the spies, instead of a short journey that was supposed to be very short, a few days, it turned into 40 years of the desert. Obviously, the story of the spies indicated that they need more work, and Hashem gave them 40 years to accomplish it. And in those 40 years, they had times of journey and times of rest. When they traveled, they struggled. When they came to the place of rest, they internalized the level that they achieved and made it theirs for good. Okay, when they were ready with it, next stage. So it was an ongoing journey, and where are we at the end of the Chumash? We are again on the border of the land of Israel, about to enter, because I achieved the goal. Now, this pattern that they went through in the desert is the pattern of each and every one of us during our lifetime, and it's Jewish history in a nutshell. At each point in our history, we had challenges in those areas. The Jewish people entered the land of Israel, they were challenged a lot. Not the exact same challenges as the Jewish people had in the desert, but in the same areas, according to where they were. Three categories. And sometimes they succeeded and gained very high levels. Sometimes there were lower points. And then Hashem indicated to them, you have to move ahead by maybe bringing an enemy, by this, bringing a hunger, whatever it was, or sending prophets to talk to them, right? And then they came back up. And that's all of Jewish history till Mashiach will come. And it's accumulation, an accumulation of all generations that will bring us there. That's also the structure of Shabbat and holidays after 6 days of work. During the 6 days of work, we face different realities of life, different interactions with people, and we are exposed to challenges in these three areas. No matter what level we are, because it can go further and further, higher and higher. To the point that we can be very, very happy with people who have what we don't have without any reflection on ourselves. Doesn't matter where we are, what we have, what we don't have, just being full-heartedly happy as if it would have been us. That's a very, very high level. And it could be achieved. By some people, it is achieved, right? As a nation, as a whole, it will be fully achieved when Mashiach comes. Then we don't have any more to struggle. This will be the ultimate time of rest. But we are given every week one day where we are not exposed to the struggle the way we are exposed during the week. And if we do our job during the week, not only do we have rest because we are not involved so much with the world, with physicality, with, you know, the realities of every day, but Hashem also grants us an additional soul, meaning it puts more holiness into us as a result of what we accomplished before during the week. And that's a gift from him, like a reward for the struggle that will help us, if we take advantage of it, to internalize what we fought for during the week, make it ours, and then we'll go to the next week with more strength and capability to face, hopefully, challenges on a higher level. In general, that's also the story of life vis-a-vis the world to come. In this life, all through our life, we struggle, we overcome challenges, we are faced with tests, and in the world to come, it will be a time of rest, no challenges anymore. Whatever we accomplished here, we will eat the fruit of labor over there. It's not a simple job, because what is accepted of us is very, very high. As I said, in terms of jealousy, the ultimate is total happiness for other people. Meaning, no need or desire to speak evil against other people, to fight, no struggle with what they have and I don't. Very, very high level. In physical desires, we have to be involved in physicality. We have to eat, we have to drink, we have to sleep, we have to get married, we have to work, but we have to be able to do it without being attached to it. But it's not a simple story, right? To be able to do the physical things that are required for life right? And at the same time, not to have any attachment to the physical, that our attachment will be fully to the spiritual. And obviously there are again endless levels. And it's a challenge, a big challenge. Maybe the hardest of all challenges is overcoming the pursuit of honor, that it totally will not matter to us what other people think about us or about what we do. That the only thing that will matter to us will be what Hashem says. And even if people will speak against us, we'll see them totally as messengers of Hashem to do something that we need to go through and not feel any problem with it. It's like any other thing that Hashem sends our way because this is our test. It's very, very high level. So the question is, how could we overcome and grow from wherever we are, slowly, slowly, but grow in this direction? So Reb Tzadok HaKohen, that I'm basing my class on him, tells us three things that can help us. The first thing he says, we don't start from scratch. We had Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, and they ingrained in us capabilities. And if we look at Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we'll see that each one of them was mainly excelling in one of these areas. Of course, they perfected themselves fully, but each one has his own specialty, right? Uniqueness. And as we'll see, they correspond to these three areas. We know that their character trait, their specialty of Abraham was chesed, acts of kindness. What does it mean, acts of kindness? Let's analyze it. I want other people to have the best, regardless of where I am and what I have. Abraham was sick, 99 years old, a very hot day. What didn't give him rest? He doesn't have guests. He wanted to see total good by other people, meaning he didn't have this attribute of jealousy at all. What made him the happiest is good by others. One thing. Now let's go to Yitzchak. We know Yitzchak is gvura, strength, self-discipline, totally detachment from the physical. Only what Hashem wants. This was his aim and desire. Didn't have any attachment to any physical thing. And Yaakov said about himself, katonti, I am small. You give me so much kindness, and who am I that deserves it? I don't deserve it, meaning total humility. The opposite of pursuing honor. And obviously they ingrained it in us. And he continues and says something very, very beautiful. He says, when we follow in their footsteps and work on these three areas and grow in them through our life as a nation, this enables us to overcome our enemies. And let's see why. We had three major enemies, still have three major enemies all along our history. One is Esav and his descendants. One is Ishmael and one is Amalek, which is a branch of Esav that has something unique about it. So let's see what is their essence. Esav is a killer. Why a killer? People who are in his way don't have the right to exist. What means it's all about him and what he has and what all about having it all, right? Other people bother him. It's the opposite of jealousy, right? While Abraham can take anybody, even idol worshippers into his home, he cannot take people around him, right? Anyone who is in his way is gone. Yitzchak is detached from any physical thing. He doesn't need anything. What is told to us about Ishmael? Yado bakol. He steals, right? His hand is all over, taking, right? It's the opposite. And Amalek is famous and known for being arrogant. Ovadia, who was a convert, interestingly enough, from Edom, from the children of Esau, right, speaks about the arrogance of Amalek. And he says that Hashem tells him, even if you'll put your nest among the stars, I'll bring you down. What does it mean, put your nest among the stars? Seeing yourself as above everybody, right? Arrogance. Hashem will put him, bring him back from there, put him down from there. When we do our inner job of fighting with jealousy, overcoming jealousy, physical indulgence, and the pursuit of honor, right? So these three nations will be given to us. So that's one thing that can help us, that helps us, and can comfort us. We are not starting from scratch. This is not demanded from other nations. The obligation not to speak evil about another person, not to speak lashon hara, other nations are not obligated to be careful with it. They cannot say a lie about somebody else, right? It's obviously not right. But, you know, they don't have the obligation of lashon hara. We do, why? Because we have the capability to want the best for everybody and to treat them as they are us, right? So we don't have to worry. If we tap into our potential, it's inside us, we can reveal it and we can get there. That's one thing. The second thing that can help us is Shabbat. The very structure that Hashem created in time, 6 days of work and one day that is Shabbat. And as I said before, not only because it's a time of rest and contemplation and introspection and seeing where we are, what's our goal, who created the world, why are we here? Of course, that's also Shabbat. But there is something else in Shabbat. And this is the holiness Hashem gives into us, the Neshama Yetera, that brings a higher level of holiness into us and enables us to overcome these three things. But there is something else that is written in our week's portion. And I want you to go to the end of chapter 10, page 787. There is something very unique here. We read that they traveled for 3 days, right? Meaning Hashem sent them on a journey to conquer these three categories of spiritual development. But then, as you see, there are two psukim. There is space between 34 and 35, right? You don't see it in the English, but you see it in the Hebrew. You have to look at 786. You'll see that there are two psukim here, 35 and 36, Lamed Hey and Lamed Vav, that are separated from the rest of the psukim with a long space. And there is an upside down nun before them and after them. And that's how it will appear in the Sefer Torah. What is it? What does it mean? So our sages tell us that the book of Bamidbar is really three books. Up till these two psukim is one book. These two psukim is a book on itself, a chumash on its own. And from chapter 11 till the end is another chumash. And it's based on a pasuk in Mishlei. I won't go into it. We don't have time for it. But three books. So ultimately, we have seven chumashim. Five that are seven, because the book of Bamidbar is divided into three. And as we said before, till chapter 11, it's an ideal reality. It describes the Jewish people at the highest point. The Mishkan was thus inaugurated. The presence of the divine came in. They're encamped in the desert in a way that the nations are jealous of. They are pure, unbelievable reality. as we see after these two psukim, the struggle starts. And ups and downs and ups and downs. What's in between? Two psukim. Let's see what's written in it, in this two psukim. Okay? Then the ark would journey. As I told you, the ark journeyed as well with them, of course, right? Moses said, arise, Hashem, and let your foes be scattered. Let those who hate you flee from before you. This is the pasuk when we open up the ark, when we read the Torah too, right? When we take out the Sefer Torah, we go on Shabbat, right? Or during the week when the Torah is read. The ark is open. These are the psukim that we say, right? So what do we say? Arise, Hashem, right? And this will cause your enemies, the enemies of Hashem, who are the enemies of Hashem, the enemies of the Jewish people, to scatter, to fail. Then there is another pasuk. And when it rested, they came to the place that they had to encamp. Now the Mishkan is erected and the Aron is put in the inside the Mishkan, inside the tabernacle. We say something else, what we will say Shabbat, on Shabbat, right? When the Sefer Torah comes back to the Aron, is put back in the Aron. What do we say? And when it rested, he would say, reside, O Hashem, among the mighty thousands of Israel. Okay? Reside in Hebrew is Shuva. Shuva. I want you to remember the word. So, there is a connection between scattering the enemies, killing the enemies, overcoming our enemies, and the fact that we start the journey with the Aron. And when we encamp, the journey is over, right? We say, now, Shuva, sit, quiet, rest. You can rest already. It's connected to what we are discussing. There is a Jewish camp in an ideal place. They are starting now on a journey of bringing this high level to everyday reality. It will not be easy, but something is going with them, the Aron. And in the Aron is the Torah. The Torah is going with us. That's the third thing that enables us to overcome these three categories that we have to fight with. We have the Aron, we have the Torah, and this is our guide. And the Torah itself connects following the Aron to the fact that our enemies are scattered. How do we overcome Esav, Ishmael, Amalek? By the fact that we follow Torah, that we take advantage of Shabbat, that we tap into the potential that Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah put into us. When we are dedicated to this fight, in the inner struggle and overcoming the spiritual challenges that we have, then Hashem is in the midst of us. The Torah gives us the merit. Following the Torah gives us the merit to scatter our enemies. Now, in every generation, there are people who do it on different levels, but they're really dedicating their life for what they should. Still, we are not redeemed. The enemies are there, even when there are righteous people among us, and there are always righteous people among the Jewish people. There isn't such a thing as a generation without righteous people. So how come? There are two levels of accomplishment. There is the personal one, and there is the national one. In order for Mashiach to come, in order for the situation to change for all of the Jewish people, the nation as a whole, or at least the majority of the nation, has to do their job. At times it's not so. Till Mashiach will come, till all of us will do our job. What about those who really do the work and are at difficult times? Enemies fight us, kill, destroy, right? What about the righteous people who did their job? So we are told something very comforting. And this is, there is a personal redemption and a national redemption, a global relation. redemption. The global redemption, the national redemption will be when the majority of us are where we are supposed to be. But a person can be redeemed even at time of exile. Because what is redemption? Redemption is not coming out of Egypt. That's stage number one. Redemption is the total acceptance of Torah. A person who accepts Torah in his everyday life is redeemed. He fulfilled his job. He will be in the best place after 120 when Mashiach comes. And he's in the best place here too. Because no matter what's going on in his life, if he's capable of doing it, he is at peace. He doesn't complain. He doesn't have questions. He's fully with Hashem all along. And if you are with Hashem, you miss nothing. There is a pasuk in Dvarim. Hashem Elokim im itcha, Hashem Elokim imach, lo chasart adavar. When Hashem is with you, you lack nothing. Because your attitude and your view of what's happening keeps you in peace. It doesn't mean that there is no suffering. And every suffering has a reason. Nobody is perfect fully. And there are certain things that everyone has to go through. Sometimes suffering is a test and not even a connection, in connection to this particular person's difficult actions, right? So it could be a time of difficulty. But a person who is really connected to Hashem is all the time resting. His life is a happy life, regardless of what's going on around. And it's not a contradiction to difficulties and suffering. Two different things. Obviously, the more of us and the more we do what we have to do, we will also bring the redemption closer. Okay, we'll open for questions and answers.
Before we open, this class is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas, Ne'irachai Nechama Bracha, Bas David Mordechai. A brief announcement, next week's class is going to be on Monday, not Tuesday. I'll be sending out a new Zoom link the end of this week. All right.
It's a one-time thing. It will be Monday next week.
Right. All right. You should be able to open for questions.
Hi, Rebson. I had a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
I just, when you said that the Ta'ava, the fight against Yishmael is connected to Yitzchak's detachment from the physical, it's been pointed out in so many ways that in this generation we're so enmeshed in physicality. I don't want to speak negatively about, you know, the Jewish world, but it seems almost insurmountable, like a tidal wave that's almost insurmountable. And in terms of our arch enemy, Yishmael, who is presenting himself in such an almost insurmountable ways, it seems almost impossible to fight the war of materialism. And from what you're saying, it seems until we do that, we can't be victorious over Yishmael. Can you comment about that?
Sure. Very good question. The point is not totally overcoming. It's fighting it wherever we are, moving slowly towards it. We are not asked to finish the job, but we are not free not to do it, right? So everyone, wherever he is, obviously the tests in this area are very, very, very big in our generation. We have to start from wherever we are and take small steps over time. And that's all that is demanded from us. Hashem knows what we can, what we can't. He knows the test he puts in front of us. The question is, what's our goal? If our goal is to fight it and we take sincere steps towards it, slowly, slowly, that's all we have to do.
I hear you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused. I mean, all these three things are actually connected, because if somebody has a desire for kavod, they want to have more material things, and they also probably have more material desires, and the same kind of thing. But if somebody comes into this world, they all come in with different levels. So a person who comes in that doesn't have a lot of desire, either for comfort or for materiality or the other things that you need to overcome. So it would seem that it says lifun tara agra, that the more struggle you have, the more reward you get. But these people should probably have less struggle. Their struggle has to be different than somebody who's born with all these tendencies to want
Okay,
material things and cover.
this is also taken into account. Somebody asked once, the Sfat Emet was,
Of
one of the
course, yes.
very, very great people, obviously, right? How does one become a Sfat Emet? How did you become a Sfat Emet? What he answered was, I was born on a mountain. Meaning he didn't give himself any credit for the fact that he was the Sfat Emet. Right? What he's expressed in his lifetime was that he's afraid that he doesn't do enough according to his understanding and knowledge. Okay? So, yes, there are very major differences between people in terms of what they are born with, but we are not accountable for the place where we start from.
Of course not.
Only what direction are we moving towards, higher or lower? The direction is in the hands of each and every one of us. So what the Sfat Emet will be demanded to accomplish is not what I will have, to be accountable for, right? But most probably his wrongdoings, I am very far even for my mitzvot, right? I wish my mitzvot will be as his wrongdoings, right? I don't think I'll accomplish it in my lifetime. So it doesn't have to worry us. Hashem knows us, he knows what he gave us. He knows where we start from, and where we start from, not our problem. Things that happen to us that are beyond our control, not our problem. Like people were born in different families, different generations, right? Different countries, different societies. That's not what counts. What counts is where I started from is only a starting point. Where am I moving towards? Up or down? And if I have ups and downs, it's also okay, as long as the direction is up. So Esav, with all his tendencies, could be a partner with Yaakov in establishing the Jewish nation if he would have done his job. Okay, and then he would have been even greater because the challenges that he had were enormous. But he made a choice, right? And everyone can make a choice which direction he wants to go.
Right. People's challenges are so much more different. Some people have such higher challenges, it looks to be.
That what the
Some
people
people have so much more intense, hard struggles than other people have, just where they came into.
no. I'll tell you, a person that seems to us as not having struggles is in a more difficult place. He can look around, he's the
Right,
best.
that's my question, basically.
He's the best and he can be compliant. He has to work not less hard than those who struggle very much in order to grow further. And it might be harder.
Okay, thank you so much.
Right? Is that,
Wonderful
I'm the
having
best.
you.
What do you want from me? Right?
You
It
said
could be
you're
even
doing
a
the best, but
leader.
if something doesn't don't matter to you, like if you see somebody who has a much nicer house or better clothes or better children or whatever, well, maybe better children get you a little bit more excited than better house. But some people are like that and some people are not like that, and you just put
Right.
it
But
easy,
if
make it
even in
easier for
terms of
you to do.
spirituality, there are different levels of souls. There are people who have it harder spiritually than others. But they are asked to do much less. And if they do the little that they can, they'll be as great as those who did much more because they could. See, the Torah compares Moshe and Aaron many times. Rashi says, so sometimes the Torah says Moshe and Aaron, and sometimes the Torah says Aaron and Moshe.
Because
Why?
they're
Because they
equal.
are equal. So Moshe Feinstein asked, how could we say something like this? Moshe is above everybody, and it's one of our beliefs. So how could we say that Aaron is like Moshe? It's not true. So he says what this Rashi means is not the ultimate level. It's the extent that they utilize their potential. Meaning, in Eset Tzadik, who is greater? Both. Equal. Because both of them materialize them to the maximum, whatever they were able to. The ultimate level, that's Hashem's reasons for whatever. We had to have one person that was above everybody else in order to know the Torah is Emes. Right? That nobody can say something against what he said because it's the word of Hashem. So that's what we know about why this is Moshe, who is greater than everybody else. I don't know that this is the only reason, but this is what we are told. That's one of the reasons, right? But if you look at the two of them in the world to come, both are in the same place. They got potential, they actualized it to the maximum. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, we'll finish here and I'll see you Monday, Natasha.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. Thank you.
Sure.